everybody. Boy, that's a great gavel, isn't it? That's real. Thank you, whoever brought that gavel. Hello, everybody. I'm Nancy. Thank you for joining this meeting of the Joint Ways and Means Committee for this community meeting on the state budget. I'm going to give you just a minute or two introduction to the guidelines that we're using. The guidelines are designed to maximize the number of people who we can hear from tonight, because we want to be hearing from you and as many of you as possible in 2 hours and on as many different topics as we can cover. We will start by introducing ourselves and telling you what part of the state we come from. Let's start down here.
Dan Rayfield, Corvallis, Philomath, Oregon State University.
Awesome. Good evening. I'm Representative Greg Smith. I represent the very best district in the state of Oregon. Yeah. We're so glad you're here, and it's just great to be home. Thank you for being here.
I'm Betsy Johnson. I'm from Scappoose. I represent Northwest Oregon, North Tillamook County, Clatsop, Columbia, a little Multnomah in the working waterfront, and rural Washington County.
Senator Johnson does not need a microphone. Normally, I need a microphone. But I'm Senator Richard Devlin. I represent the communities of Lake Oswego, West Lynn, Tualatin, and Lower Southwest Portland, and I'm the Senate co-chair of this committee.
Good afternoon again. I'm Nancy Nathanson, a state representative from Eugene. I represent primarily North Eugene and part of downtown. We are going to take 2 hours of testimony. And the time that we're spending right now introducing ourselves or me explaining the guidelines will not come out of your time. So we'll be here until about 7:10 or 7:15. We will be calling three names at a time. There's a table here with three chairs. While three people are at the table, three will be making their way up the aisle. There are three chairs. I'll point. Three chairs up here in the front, reserved seating, that's what we call on deck. So you can be making your way close to the table, so when you're called on next, it's real easy and quick for you to get to the testimony table. When you get to the table to testify, that sounds real official, doesn't it? When you come up to speak, you don't need to wait for everyone to get completely settled in. Whoever is seated first can go ahead and start. Again, it's not that we're trying to disrespect those people who are taking an extra 10 seconds to get there and be seated. It's that we're just hurrying to make sure we can hear so many of you who are here tonight. Each person has 2 minutes to testify. I haven't seen it yet, but there's going to be a timer that displays behind us. There we go. It's going to display. You'll see the time. And when the 2 minutes is up, there will be a beep. That means it's time to stop talking, and we will call on the next person to start their turn. So we're asking everyone to stay within the guidelines. Again, this is your meeting, and we want to hear from you. When you signed up, you made a note of the subject area that you wanted to speak to, such as education, human services, public safety, or some other areas. We're going to be rotating among those different areas again so that we can try to touch on all the different kinds of topics you want to talk about tonight. We're going to hear testimony on each of those budget areas. Please, let's not take time for applause or other sorts of interruptions, because that's just going to come out of the 2 hours of testimony. We will not be responding to any of your comments or your questions. This is your time to talk and for us to listen, and we don't want to take time away from you. If you want to submit written testimony, you can go ahead and testify verbally here at the table, and when you're done, you can deliver your written testimony to the table over there, wave, over on that side. If you have testimony that you want to send to us by email, if we didn't get to you tonight, if so many of you signed up that we didn't get to every person, or you realize there was something you left out and you want to make sure we understand it, there is an email address. You don't have to send it to each one of us separately. There's one single email address that you can send it to. I'll say it, but it will be written down at the table you came in and passed, the sign-up table. It's written there. There's also little slips of paper that you can take home with you. It's waysandmeans.budget@oregonlegislature.gov. If you send just one email to that address, it goes to all of us. It also becomes part of the public record so everybody can read what you had to say. So it's time to get started. We're going to start with human services and public safety for the sign-up sheets. But before we do that, there's a special panel that I'd like to call on first. School Superintendent Dr. Fred Miyako and Hermiston Mayor Drotzman, will you please come forward? And so this panel is going to take about 5 minutes, I understand, not six, but we are very pleased that you're going to be first. So the people who should be getting ready to come up to testify next will be Nazario Rivera, J.T. Thorne, Dana Stone. So you can make your way up here. You're on deck for the next group.
Thank you, and welcome to Hermiston. On behalf of the Hermiston School District, we just wanted to give you a quick video review of some of the great career and technical education going on in our school before you get into all the weighty matters before you tonight. We thought you might enjoy a sneak peek into our classrooms. Please roll the video.
Aspects of like learning from textbook conviction, get hands-on experience, and yeah, there'll be a point that you'll be by yourself, but at the same time, it's more important to be by yourself because you like lose yourself and then at the end of the day we're just a goal as a group to share each other's information. We're taking this class as like our class in Photoshop and like what do we do with these things? You can actually go like after high school to a school and learn more about and then actually get a career in doing what you like to do.
If I just might point out, these programs are representative of the great work going on in our classrooms all across this state. Thank you for the weighty work that you do.
Thank you for that great presentation.
Well, I'd like to personally thank Dr. Miyako and the Hermiston School District for hosting this event today. I'm Mayor Dave Drotzman of Hermiston, and I want to welcome you guys to our community and thank you for coming to Eastern Oregon and listening to us and the concerns we have out here. I had the fortunate opportunity to attend the Business Summit and the League of Cities Capitol Day, where I got to see many of our elected leaders on both sides of the aisle and from both houses speak to us. It provided me with some clarity of the issues we all face. We were told by our leaders that it's us cities that have the difficult jobs, because we are what makes Oregon great. We have to implement the policies and legislations that you pass, including a budget, and that you were there to make our lives easier. So the people on the ground making Oregon great can continue with that passion. I'm sure the comments weren't meant to placate us, but that you really meant them. The greatest challenges we face locally come down to the lack of control for our own destinies, and so often decided in a community 4 hours away from us. We as cities have two great challenges facing us, neither of which we can control. We cannot control what you do with PERS. We need your help and leadership to continue to reform this cost factor while we recognize the promises that were made. We will have another double-digit increase to our community and will cost us an additional $300,000 here in Hermiston, which means less public services, less police, fire, parks and rec programs, and libraries, all the things that make our communities great. We also don't control our revenue streams. Due to measures 5 and 50, we as a community can't decide how much or how little we tax ourselves. Most cities like ours are also in compression, so when we pass levies, we cannibalize our neighbors, pitting district against district and city against rural. We shouldn't have to steal from each other to balance the needs for our community. We need real property tax reform. We need tremendous leadership from you to help us with those issues. As a state, Oregon just celebrated its birthday, its 158th birthday, and a lot of comments about our pioneering spirit and making things happen. Those early pioneers, through tremendous leadership in the face of unsurmountable obstacles, persevered to finish that journey. And that's why today it's called the Oregon Trail, not the Utah Trail. We need your leadership and support. We stand willing and ready to assist. Thank you for your time, dedication to our great state, and traveling to Eastern Oregon.
Thank you, Mayor, for your comments. Nazario, JT, and Dana. And the next panel, please be making your way up front. Karen Pettigrew, Susan McHenry, Rick, starts with an S, let's see, Boardman PD. Thank you.
Hello, co-chairs and committee. Thank you so much for being here this evening. My name is Dana Stone. I'm the founder and executive director of Rocco's Family Network. I live in Baker City. I'm here tonight in support of the developmental disabilities community and am joined by several other family members in the audience. We wear yellow to show our support for the continued funding at current levels of DD services. These services help families who experience disability, like mine, to live full lives. They help strengthen our families, and they enhance our communities. Thank you again for being here this evening.
Good evening. My name is JT Thorne, and I am an employer of record, and my wife is a personal support worker. And we are here to speak about a better Oregon and why cutting the program would be a travesty to all who stand to gain from it, due largely to Oregon's choice to make sure that large corporations are happy and these corporations continue to maintain the nation's lowest corporate tax rates is the real reason we are here. It is being decided whether or not a program that my developmentally disabled daughter relies on to have a small percentage of a normal life is possibly going to put the wants and needs of billion-dollar corporations above hers. They already have the life they want. She's just trying to live the life that she wants any way she can. If this program were to be cut even a little, it would put a large strain on our ability to provide the support and 24-hour care that she provides or requires. This is one of the reasons my wife is her personal support worker and cares for our daughter. We try to help her live a normal life and financially survive on a standard that is already lower than the extremely low need income standard of Oregon. I want to thank the committee for this time and ask you to please be mindful of the individuals that are already having a hard time with life and don't make them suffer more at the expense of keeping billion-dollar corporations happy by not making them pay what they already owe, but having them pay their fair share. That will show state, country, and even the world, and most importantly, the individuals that rely almost solely on this program, that you care more about people and not what people think of you. Because after all, we and you are the builders of their future and future generations to come. Thank you.
Co-chairs Devlin, Nathanson, and members of the committee, my name is Nacido Rivera, and I was raised here in Hermiston. I recently graduated from Oregon State University, where I studied public health. I was interested in pursuing a career in healthcare because I want to promote health in rural communities. I currently work at Good Shepherd Medical Center as a community health worker. Quickly after working there, I realized that a lot of the members of my community, my neighbors, my friends, don't have access to equitable healthcare services. The families that we serve in the emergency room wait until last minute to access healthcare because they don't have any health insurance. When they are asked to follow up with their primary care provider, they are unable to do so because the appointments are unaffordable. It is clear that we still have health disparities we need to address. Revenue is absolutely essential to ensure that children and families should not have to compromise their health. I have seen a single mother struggle because her kids needed vaccines to be able to continue to be enrolled in school. The children were almost kicked out of school because they were unable to pay for the vaccinations. This is unacceptable. Children shouldn't be turned away from schools because they cannot afford preventative health care. When children are healthy, they are the best versions of themselves and are able to excel in school. I firmly believe that healthy communities begin with healthy bodies. I'm aware that currently there are 17,600 children who are unable to get access to health care coverage, even at Medicaid incomes. I urge you to prioritize funding for all children in our state, including Cover All Kids, House Bill 2726 and Senate Bill 558 as a funding priority. You can help end needless suffering for children and families across Oregon. I refuse to turn children away from, and you should too. Thank you for your time.
Thank you all. Go ahead and start. Oh, and thank you very much. On deck will be Karen Pettigrew.
I'm here.
And after that is Carlin Sacco, Tim Mabry, Jimger Ogle.
I'm going to start. My name is Karen Pettigrew. I'm the city manager from Boardman. And I didn't realize I could only speak on one subject, so I have four quick ones.
That's fine.
I think that I'd really like for you to restore the recreation immunity. That's a no funding thing, and it's a common sense thing. And I have to tell you, I've been on the park board for 25 years, and I am reluctant to close the park because of putting that off onto the employees. As a city that has a police department, I am very concerned about the fact that you're thinking of closing the forensic lab and decreasing the state police drug enforcement in this area. And we, as you know, as you've traveled out here, we're not next door to almost anywhere except each other. So if Clackamas and Bend are the ones that would be, do the forensic lab, we are going to see a definite downturn in our response. Also, the drug, the task force, we call them the BENT team here. I brought a resolution, and I will send it over. It shows you how many drug cases we've taken care of, how much we're doing really good work in this area, and you're not going to do less drug enforcement with no people. Okay, now the transportation package. When the snow leaves the road, it's going to be nothing but potholes, and it's going to be all over Oregon. It's not going to be just Boardman or Hermiston. It's going to be really bad. We, as cities, we're getting, you know, a little bit of the gas tax, and so I've been there almost 10 years. I'm up to $333,000. So how many feet do you think I'm going to do with $300,000? So I can't tell you how much we need that. Mental health.
Remember, you can send us an email.
I will. Thank you.
Good evening, Chair Devlin and Chair Nathanson. Committee members, thank you for coming to Eastern Oregon and welcome home to my two local friends. I'm Susan McHenry. I chair the Local Public Safety Coordinating Council, and I'm president of Guardian Care Center. I echo my colleagues' concerns about the critical importance of our local crime lab and our narcotics enforcement team, both vital public safety services. I also implore your continued support for the Child Abuse Multidisciplinary Intervention Fund, CAMI. There are none among us more deserving than our helpless, abused children who are served and protected by Guardian Care and other child abuse intervention centers in Oregon. Additionally, drug courts, community corrections, and justice reinvestment all provide a continuum of services that provide public safety, but also save the state money through diverted prison beds and reductions in crime. Since inception, justice reinvestment, the premise of justice reinvestment has been that Oregon could not afford to build a new prison. The current budget proposal all but guarantees that new prison will become a certainty. A state that does not want to build a prison cannot underfund drug courts, community corrections, and justice reinvestment, the very mechanisms that have prevented that prison construction from becoming reality to date. Under the current budget, Oregon will ultimately spend much more money in prison construction and operations than it ever would by fully funding these proven systems. In addition, the state would enjoy better evidence-based results, lower crime rates, and better access to desperately needed treatment services. I urge you to implement allocations that will continue full and adequate funding for these vital services: OSP Crime Lab, Blue Mountain Enforcement Narcotics Team, Child Abuse Multidisciplinary Intervention Fund, Drug Court Community Corrections and Justice Reinvestment. Thank you.
Nicely done.
My name is Chief Rick Stokoe with the Boardman Police Department. I want to welcome honorable senators and representatives for being here and allowing me to speak today. I'm going to speak a little bit to both because we just don't have enough time to cover in depth of both topics, but I'm going to talk about the potential closure of the state lab in Pendleton and the reduction of a drug enforcement section through the Oregon State Police. As you will hear from other chiefs in the room today, we are extremely concerned about what impact that will make to our communities and the people that we represent and owe to do a good job for our communities. With the closure of the lab, the closest lab to our community is going to be 212 miles away. That's a long ways to bring analysts out if you have a crime scene. I came from another part of the state where the Ontario lab was closed. I got to feel the impacts of how that affected our community. It's going to be even tighter for Eastern Oregon if we lose another lab in our area. The lab is a vital partner to crime prevention and solving crimes in Eastern Oregon. So I would urge you really consider hard about removing that lab from Eastern Oregon. As far as the drug enforcement section, there's proposed to reduce the, I believe there's 19 drug enforcement officers on that team. Three of those are in this immediate area who, for a small agency such as mine, our local enforcement narcotics team couldn't do what they do without having those services from the drug enforcement section. And I'm worried that we will lose potential HIDA funding if we lose those positions with state police and how that will affect our communities. Like I, you are public servants, and I think we owe it to our community and our citizens to do the best we can to take care of them. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, this panel is Carlin, Tim, and Ginger, is that right? And on deck will be Kelly Ducote, Jenny, and Dale. Go ahead and start.
Co-Chair Devlin, Co-Chair Nathanson, welcome to Eastern Oregon, and members of the committee, welcome to you all too. My name's Tim Mabry. I'm a local business person. I'm also a member of the Regional Solutions team for Northeast Oregon. I'm here to this evening to talk to you about support of education, both public university support fund and community colleges. When you live out in the sticks, we are lucky to be able to avail ourselves of distance education, and EOU and BMCC work wonderfully together. But they're not a replacement for campuses. And at the end of the school year and at the end of terms, when I see the list of graduates that come out of those places and what their degrees are in, from an economic development perspective, I cannot think of a better investment of state funds. And the changes that you make in the lives, not only of the graduates, but of the population of Eastern Oregon. It's just a critical thing. We have workforce issues here, and that's a local source of improving that problem. But as you well know, it takes money, and I just ask you to please remember the geographics and the economic situation in Eastern Oregon when it comes to making your funding decisions. Thank you for your time.
Good evening. My name is Carlin Sacco. I'm a senior at Eastern Oregon University. I'm also a survivor of domestic violence, homelessness, and a mother of four amazing children. I know what it's like to lose your custody of your kids to the state. It's a harrowing experience, one I'm proud to say that I was able to come back from. At the end of 2013, I was living out of a backpack, panhandling to survive, even breaking into storage units to stay warm at night here in Hermiston. By early 2014, I had found solace and refuge at the Pendleton Warming Station, and it was there that I had the internet and used it to sign up for school. There are two institutes that I have found that will welcome even the most destitute of people, giving them newfound hope in life to reach their true full potentials, and those institutes are churches and higher education. At Blue Mountain Community College, I was treated with respect and dignity. In spring of 2015, I graduated with honors and transferred to Eastern Oregon University. I am working to complete my bachelor's degree and hope to continue my education in hope that I may one day affect policy, helping to make the world a better place for my children and future generations. As a non-traditional college student, school has been an incredible opportunity for me. I do not believe that it is our responsibility to assure that we attain equal outcomes in life, but I do believe in equal opportunity, that you can come back from the darkest depths of humanity if you work hard and you can make a better future. That's the American dream, and I'm chasing it for myself at our schools. The government tends to spend money on an assortment of arguably questionable things, sometimes trivial, sometimes we're not even sure where it goes. But tonight, I'd like to ask the committee to fund these schools where people like me, the socioeconomically disadvantaged, are turning their lives around. Thank you.
My name's Ginger Ogle. I live in Pendleton. I'm a member of a new organization called Action Together Oregon, but I'm here tonight as a teacher. I spent 6 years as a classroom teacher here in Oregon, including some in Title I schools in small and one very tiny town. I had 50% English language learners in a Title I school. What we really need you to do as a committee is to make the hard choice to make sure that we have a balanced tax system where corporations pay for the benefits that they get back from the state in the form of a positive, well-educated workforce. Businesses understand that nothing is free. They get it. And we can't attract new industry with short school years and massive class sizes and inadequate materials. Every teacher has special students that they remember. The one that I remember, her name was Adriana. She hated coming to school, but it was her job. She showed up every day with inadequate textbooks, struggling to learn to read, struggling to learn to do math. She didn't want to be there. It was frustrating for her, but she showed up to do her job. Her goals were simple. She just wanted to grow up. I let her down because I didn't have adequate materials for everything that she needed, but she kept trying. We absolutely should not have to be here pitting different services against each other. We need to make the hard choice to have enough funding to take care of every citizen in this state. And that's your job, and I am begging you to do it, even if it means that we need to raise corporate taxes. Thank you so much for coming the whole way out here.
The next panel is Kelly, Ginny, and Dale. After that, Carol Green, Joy Fost, and the last name I believe is Salemi, Oregon Nurses Association. Please.
Honorable chairs, co-chairs, and members of the Joint Wayne's Committee, Ways and Means Committee, we come to you today from LeGrand with a vision for economic development and revitalization of downtown LeGrand, focusing on a quality of life, job creation and retention, and especially in the medical and educational communities of Eastern Oregon and LeGrand. The Liberty Theater is located in LeGrand's historical district at 1010 Adams Avenue and is listed on the National Register of Historic Places. In 1910, the Arcade Theater was established at that location and continued to operate as a performing arts center and movie theater until 1959, when the Liberty went dark. Jenny and I, on my right, have a passion for preserving our heritage for future generations. In 2010, I committed to the historical preservation of the Arcade Liberty as a regional performing arts center to be enjoyed and served as an inspiration for future generations. Our vision and mission is to preserve the Liberty as an example of yesteryear and an inspiration for future generations for the next 100 years. Preservation places a high premium on the retention of all historic fabric through conservation, maintenance, and repair. It reflects a building's continuum over time through successive occupancies as a regional performing arts center for LeGrand and Northeast Oregon, and as an example for the entire state of Oregon. To allow this building, with all of its historic fabric, to not be preserved and serve as it was intended, we would feel would be a great loss not only to the citizens of our valley, but to the rich heritage of the state of Oregon. Thank you.
Dale, would you please state your name for the record?
Oh, excuse me. Dale Mammon.
Honorable co-chair and members of the committee, I'm Virginia Mammon, and I have been involved with the Liberty Theater for over 6 years, and my reason in doing so has changed during that time. I started as a historic preservationist, primarily desiring to maintain the integrity of LeGrand's historic district, but over the years that vision has grown because I have seen the changes for better that the theater has made in the lives of many individuals. During that 6 years and the various states of demolition, It has provided an incubation spot for at least three persons to grow a business or a profession, a temporary stage for an active new Shakespeare troupe, and a theater lab for college students to direct and perform. We have no other venue like this in La Grande, and our people of all ages need and deserve to have a place they can come together and create, experience, and grow. Because my husband and I believe in this project so strongly and what it can contribute to the revitalization and livability of La Grande, we have contributed many, many hours and nearly $100,000 to it in the past 6 years. Thank you.
Honorable co-chairs and members of the Joint Ways and Means Committee, thank you very much for making this trip out to Eastern Oregon. We do appreciate it. My name is Kelly Ducote, and I am the Executive Director of the Liberty Theater Foundation in La Grande. We are a 501c3 nonprofit dedicated to restoring La Grande's only remaining historic theater, which was built in 1910 as a vaudeville house. We envision a unique performing arts venue where patrons can not only enjoy a wealth of local and traveling talent, but can also see the layers of our community's past in a historic building. We have poured thousands of volunteer hours and dollars into our project thus far, and we look forward to visiting Salem this spring to testify before the Subcommittee on Capital Construction. We are making a request to match our nearly $1 million raised to date of cash pledges and in-kind support to open and maintain a downtown regional venue that supports tourism and economic development in Eastern Oregon. We look forward to being a part of this legislative process. With me today are two longtime supporters and contributors who see the value in not only restoring this historic cultural resource, but in utilizing it to further cultural education, encourage additional economic development and investment, and restore vitality to downtown La Grande and Northeast Oregon as a region. We know today and in this session, you are considering a number of pressing issues. The Liberty Theater Foundation is asking you to remember Eastern Oregon and the Liberty Theater as a regional destination point for tourism and economic development. Thank you.
Thank you all. This panel is Joy Carroll and Atusa, thank you. And after that, Matt Shercliffe, Darla Huxel, and Kelsey McDaniel. Daniel McDonald.
Dear co-chairs and members of the committee, my name is Carol Green, and I'm a certified substance abuse counselor in Umatilla County. I'm a member of AFSCME Local 3742. I've been working with individuals in the substance abuse field for 13 years. Thank you for the opportunity to share the importance of funding substance abuse treatment programs. Many of the people that I work with didn't have a fair start to begin with, and they don't have the skills to live a healthy life without mind-altering substances. They live in fear. Many have a long history of physical and mental abuse and homelessness. They have no supports and don't know how to find the resources to improve their lives and become contributing members of our society. In our program, they are able to use community resources by helping them get their GED, get into college, find residential treatment programs, and other recovery programs. We connect them to housing, employment, and keep their families connected and stable. We surround them with a support team that gives them the skills to stay clean and sober. Through all of this education, resources, and supports, many of the clients we work with are able to turn their lives around and live a life of recovery. Some even choose to come into this line of work to give help to others. My drive is seeing these success stories and knowing that they now have the tools to keep succeeding. Cutting substance abuse treatment and access to the Oregon Health Plan will only create the need for more expensive and extensive emergency health and human services to put a strain on our child welfare system as well. Please find a way to raise revenue and not make the cuts to these crucial services. Thank you.
Co-chairs Devlin and Nathanson and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to address you today. and offer testimony on Oregon's budget framework. My name is Atusa Salami, and I'm a registered nurse. I am here today on behalf of the Oregon Nurses Association, representing over 14,000 members, registered nurses working throughout our state's healthcare system. Our state's budget shortfall has been caused by the choices Oregon has made in having the lowest corporate taxes in the country. We now have a new choice. Ask Oregon's largest corporations to pay their fair share in taxes or to cut the vital programs that so many of our Oregonians rely on. The proposed budget framework would have a very devastating impact on a range of health services that provide critical access to care for our patients, including thousands who stand to lose coverage, as well as cuts to key nurse-led public health programs, such as family planning and school-based health care centers. This would further strain our provider and healthcare systems and their capacities. As a nurse in rural Oregon, I see patients every day who will be without care if they lose their insurance, diabetics who will not have the medications that they need, people who will have to go back putting off a routine visit until it's too late, and that persistent cough that they put off, they're now in the emergency room, and there are numerous masses, and it's, you know, something, those tumors that they maybe could have prevented long ago. I have seen that happen. As a mother of five children in local schools, I do not wish to return to the days of overcrowded classrooms and lack of art, music, and other electives. I don't want our district to lose the school nurse that we finally have. The legislature now has a choice to raise revenue this session and maintain funding for these essential services that are critical to successful outcomes. As a registered nurse and a mom, I strongly urge you to take action now to help preserve these needed services in our communities.
My name is Joy Post, and I'm here to urge the legislature to continue funding in-home care for people with disabilities to help them live safely with dignity and independence. I'd like corporations to pay their fair share in taxes instead of cutting the programs that help our son live as independently as possible with his disabilities. My son didn't choose to be disabled and need us more, but living at home and having the funding available for us to work for him has been life-changing for all of us. We are no longer living in poverty as of last year because we care for him and we keep him safe, and now we can get paid to do that, which has been huge for us. Please don't cut the programs. Instead, please choose to ask corporations to pay their fair share in taxes. And I hope my husband, who is also a personal support worker, and my son, who he also wanted to talk, he's on the list, and hopefully you guys will get to hear from him because he definitely has a voice. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. So this is Matt, Darla, and Kelsey, and on deck will be Erica Kefauver, Dolores Pearsall, and Cidronio.
We have DA Premise. We have a three kind of part presentation, three DAs, if that'd be okay.
It's fine with me.
And then just switch it.
It's up to you.
Okay.
Probably just
be sure to state your name, and I'll try to figure out changing the sheets.
Thank you. Chair Nathanson and Devlin, members of the committee, thank you. My name is Matt Shurcliffe. I'm the district attorney for Baker County. With me is Kelsey McDaniel from Union County.
Would you take the microphone?
Oh, I'm sorry. And Daniel Premise, the DA in Umatilla County. We're here because of the proposed crime lab shutdown. OSP, as you know, requested money to improve the crime lab to build another building. That was denied, and in the governor's budget, the crime lab was to be eliminated. We believe the crime lab should stay open. It was just recently accredited, and while we could see the need down the road for a new building, right now it's working well and they're providing great services for us. Us three met with the Oregon State Police last week, and we asked them what would be the cost to keep the lab open to maintain the status quo, and they're working on that, but we believe those costs are going to be modest compared to what we would lose in the system. And I want to talk briefly about what we would lose in the system. I've been a DA over 20 years in Eastern Oregon. I've had several murder cases. I've had attempted murder, major crime cases, and I can tell you that the Pendleton Crime Lab responds quickly to our needs and investigates these crime scenes. Many of our crime scenes are outdoors. If it was hours and hours or the next day for that crime investigation unit to come, we would lose vital evidence. I had a case recently, 50 miles out of Baker County, where a person was shot. It was a murder case. The crime lab came. They processed the scene and did great in court, and I'm afraid that case might not have been won without them. It's the response time and their ability to get there. Our local detectives don't have the major crime team experience compared to forensic scientists. We've lost a lot of resources in Eastern Oregon as well recently, and having the crime lab shut down would cause even further problems and really make it hard to make those cases. Ballistic testing, delays in drug cases, all those things would be a problem. The bottom line is we just want you to maintain the status quo. We think the cost is minimal compared to the losses you're going to see and the ability for us to do these important cases in our counties. And so thank you for your time.
Honorable co-chairs, members of the committee, my name is Kelsey McDaniel. I'm the district attorney for Union County. I'm here to encourage you to keep the Oregon State Police Pendleton Crime Lab open. I think it's important to note that this lab's geographic coverage area is one-third of the state. We rely on their services to process crime scenes, test evidence, regularly testify in our courts. This resource is invaluable for law enforcement here in Eastern Oregon. I speak specifically for Union County, but I know that's the same for my counterparts. If the crime lab were to close, these services are not something that any of our local law enforcement agencies, either in my jurisdiction or any other, are prepared to backfill or supplement in any way. They will just disappear and no longer be available to us. We've developed efficient and professional working relationships with the staff. They help us assess new testing in cold cases. They present information on rape kits to our sexual assault response teams. They help us evaluate medical examiner death investigations with our major crimes teams. Their close proximity makes it extremely more efficient for our ability to meet the docketing demands of our circuit courts. Closure of the Pendleton Crime Lab would be a huge loss for our Eastern Oregon, and we can't overstate that. Trying to service Eastern Oregon from Bend or Portland is just not feasible for us. I strongly encourage you to keep the Oregon State Crime Lab open in Pendleton and operational, and we appreciate the time and consideration.
So good evening. My name is Dan Primus. I'm the district attorney for Umatilla County. And I want to agree in with my colleagues here and their sentiments, and I ask that we just maintain status quo. That's what we're asking for today, and not the pop that was denied in the governor's or in the proposed budget. And I want to speak specifically about a case. I want to give you some insight as to what it is that we deal with. Our crime lab here locally responds to major call-outs every year. In 2016, there were 14 call-outs that the crime lab from the Pendleton Forensic Laboratory responded to. And let me talk about one, not from last year, but a couple years ago. Senator Hansel, you're familiar with Umapine here within Umatilla County. It's a small rural farming area. We have an elderly female, Joyce Key, 78 years of age. She was at home. She's a widow living on the family farm that is run by her children that live some ways down the road. That evening, her home was burglarized by three young men. She was duct taped to a chair. She was beat with her own rolling pin, and she was left there to die. She was discovered by her son the following morning, her adult son. Immediately, the major crime team was called out, including the Pendleton Crime Lab, which responded. The crime lab was there for over 2 days, processing that scene, trying to give our detectives any piece of evidence that they could proceed with. One of the analysts happened to find the roll of duct tape. From that duct tape roll on the inside piece of that cardboard, they were able to pull off a DNA profile. From that DNA profile, they were able to determine who it was that was involved in this crime. That person was apprehended in Oklahoma, where he fled to after this scene. The Key family was given closure when him and his two counterparts are now in the Department of Corrections. Without the Pendleton Crime Lab, it would have taken 4 or 5 hours for Clackamas to respond. Now that family has closure, and those people have been held accountable.
Thank you, all three. This panel is Erica, Dolores, and Cedronio. After that, Bernard C. Brian Wolf and Mario or Maurice. Go ahead.
Thank you for coming to Eastern Oregon to hear our concerns. My name is Erica Kefauver, and I'm a Hermiston teacher, a parent of 5 public school students, and a lifelong citizen of Hermiston, Oregon. From all these perspectives, I'm extremely concerned about the future of Oregon's children. Oregon currently has the lowest tax rates in the nation. I currently pay higher tax rates than many corporations who do business in our state. It's time that these corporations pay their fair share to help the underfunded educational system that grows and trains their future employees. As a teacher, increasing class sizes, decreasing access to vital services like you've heard mentioned earlier, and the loss of course offerings are detrimental to the education of my students. As a parent, I fear for the opportunities of my five children. I want my teenagers to experience those amazing elective programs that you saw featured at the beginning of this presentation. I want my kindergartner to be able to have access to PE, music, and media, which she does not currently. Teachers are constantly being asked to do more with less, and it's unrealistic for the state to expect better results. When making decisions that will affect the students of Oregon, please remember my words and let the budget reflect your value of Tristan, Annabelle, Violet, Lorelei, Aria, and the other thousands of children in Oregon.
Good evening. I'm Dolores Pearsall. I am an OSEA member and a Hermiston employee for 25 years. I put three kids through this school district, and by the time I'm finished, I will have 10 grandchildren that will go through this district. I am here to not only urge you, but challenge you and everybody else in this room to fund our public schools at the level our students deserve. If providing a quality education to students is a top priority for legislators, why is it not funded at the level identified by the Quality Education Commission? Isn't it time for our corporations to pay their part in taxes and get us all out from the bottom of the barrel? Here at Hermiston, we are lucky with the administration we have, who see the importance. As Erica talked, we do have music, sometimes in the grade school, not all the time. We have band, we have PE, we have robotics. But I know other school districts that are not able to provide those services, and how sad is that for our children? Here at Hermiston, we have over 5,600 students and only two school nurses to service five grade schools, two middle schools, and a high school. Many schools don't even have one nurse. You have the choice to give our students the best education. If you don't, what does their future and our future look like? Thank you.
Madam Co-Chair and members of the committee, thank you for your time here tonight. My name is Cidronio Rangel. I am the student body president at Eastern Oregon University. I am representing higher education. My dad used to tell me stories of why he and my mom worked the way they did. Stories about their decision to move to the United States and their constant struggle to provide resources for my upbringing and my education. Those stories taught me to value higher learning and never take it for granted. When my parents left Guanajuato, Mexico, they knew exactly what they wanted for their family, an education. That is why I am here today. Without the multitude of opportunities that higher education has offered me, I wouldn't be talking here tonight. I would still be feeding cattle at 4 a.m., cleaning irrigation ditches, fixing barbed wire fences, working 2 to 3 jobs on top of schoolwork just to make ends meet, to pay electricity bill, to pay food, to pay other bills I have. Higher education is fundamental to my success. I want to make sure future generations have that same opportunity, the opportunity to learn and expand on their dreams of garnering a degree and continue to do great things. I ask you, will you support funding universities at $765 million and community colleges at $636 million at a level that keeps tuition increase below 5% so that we don't see double digits increase in higher education, so we don't see students struggle through college? Thank you.
Thank you all. This panel that's coming up is Lee, Brian, and I'm sorry, I can't read the name very well. Do you think it's Maurice or Mario?
Yeah, Maurice.
Maurice? And after that, I'd like to call Laura Courtney and, Laura Knoppenberger, Courtney Bissinger, or Bissinger, and Kevin Campbell. Yes, Lee Bernard. Yes.
Co-chairs, Representative Nathanson and Senator Devlin, vice co-chairs and members of the committee. This evening, I wish each of you a warm welcome from Hermiston and Eastern Oregon. A special thank you to Senator Hansel and Representative Smith for their service to all of Oregon. I know how many miles and how many hours you have spent to travel to listen to us. Remember, we make the same trip to the Valley to visit with many of you. I am Brian Wolf. As a fifth generation farmer, father, grandfather, and great grandfather, with the sixth generation joining me on my farm, will my farm be viable in the next few years? The Hermiston Ag Research and Extension Center has been a great part of my success in turning sand into a fertile growing medium for human foods and livestock forage, for being one of the many to make sure you find safe foods on your dinner table. Thanks to OSU, I use less water to grow a crop through careful management. My chemical and fertilizer use is carefully watched, and when a problem comes up, I contact the plant doctor at the OSU research station. Their careful monitoring of insect movement helps farmers to make wise decisions in pesticide use. Each of these keeps our growing costs affordable, and that savings is passed to you in healthier foods and improvement in your diets, making you a healthier person. Oregon State University has put together the facts and figures for you to study, but I want to share the hearts of our people. Being involved in my community, my county, as well as all of Oregon, I know that we need to keep positions currently in place in Oregon State University's statewide public service programs. That means looking at Senate Bill 805 to protect the investment made in the last session by funding the current service level. It is said that every state dollar, thank you.
And is there a Mark Bennett? You'll be on this panel also. Go ahead. You can go ahead. Okay. Thank you.
Good evening. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to testify this evening. My name is Delta Lee Bernard, and I'm here representing the Pacific Islanders living here in Eastern Oregon. I am here to urge the legislature to continue funding the COFA Premium Assistance Program that serves Pacific Islanders from Micronesia, Palau, and the Marshall Islands at its current level, which helps support my family and many other families of Pacific Islanders. Too many in our community have been uninsured for too long, and programs like this ensure our children and families are healthy. Because our state chooses to allow corporations not to pay their fair share of taxes in Oregon, funding for COFA Premium Assistance Program, which ensures the very health and wellness of our Oregon families like mine, is in jeopardy. Without support from COFA Premium Assistance Program, I would often have to choose between paying my electric bill or having food on the dinner table for my children. Providing health insurance coverage for low or poor income family, especially children like mine, should be a priority because this paves a way for a brighter future for our kids and for us. No COFA Premium Assistance means there is a very little chance for my daughter, my nephews, my nieces to even complete their education to attend college or graduate from high school. It also means just waiting to be told that I have cervical cancer because I couldn't afford to have yearly pap smear. It also means taking off from school to work and save up to take my mom to the hospital to figure out the cause of that pain she's been in for months or even years because she couldn't afford to be seen by the doctors. With COFA premiums, we would be able to prevent all these things from happening. We would be able to prevent that brain tumor before it spreads instead of just waiting to be told at the emergency room that there is nothing we can do anymore. We can put our health
healthy children in school with great hope and assurance that they will complete their schools and come back and work for our community as contributing members of society. Thank you.
Members of the committee, Baker County Commissioner Mark Bennett, greetings from the City of Unity. Eastern Oregon currently, according to the U.S. Census, has 27% of our citizens living below the poverty level, and in excess of 70% of our children are on free and reduced lunches. That's the setting that you see as you go farther east. As such, we encourage the state to consider their agreements with the counties when prioritizing funds for the upcoming biennium. Many programs delivered at the county level are shared state-county services. These programs range from health and human services, public safety, natural resources, transportation, economic development, and other community services. On transportation, we have 13 employees in Baker County to maintain 1,000 miles of road. Oregon's road system needs the resources to preserve, maintain, and modernize our county roads. PERS, the unpredictability of large increases each year, are limiting our ability to address the other budget drivers within our communities. Supporting rural Oregon can result in cost savings without cutting services. By contracting state services with the private sector in Eastern Oregon, there can be significant cost savings without eliminations of services. And one example is, in Baker County, the state contracts with a local firm to create 54 jobs with starting wages of $12 per hour and benefits. The contract provides $50,900 per year for each employee. If those jobs were not contracted out and were handled in-house, it would cost the state $73,500 per year for each employee. However, I would like to sadly note we are being told that these jobs will now be eliminated and possibly transferred back to the west side. We encourage the committee to think outside the box for delivery of services in Eastern Oregon. Thank you so much for this opportunity, and also come further east to Unity sometime. Thank you. Bye.
After this panel, we're back on the public safety program area, so I'd like to hear from Darla and again for the first time, and let's see, Art Kegler and Stuart Roberts.
Hello, co-chairs and committee. My name is Courtney Bissinger. I am from Pendleton. I am here tonight in support of the developmental disabilities community. We're wearing yellow to, you know, show our support for the Family Network. I had to quit my job of almost 12 years. I lost my home and everything, all because I have a severely disabled daughter, and I didn't know where I was going, what to do, how to, you know, get my life back on track or anything until I got connected with the Family Network system. They have helped me, they've helped me find resources I never would have found on my own. They have connected me with other parents and families that are going through the same thing that I'm going through. So when I have, you know, a meltdown and I don't know what I'm doing, because I'm a first-time mother with a disabled child, it's double hard. And the Family Networks have, they've given me a career opportunity. They have basically helped me start to get my life on the right path. I haven't been able to keep a job because no caregiver can handle my daughter. She's a lot to handle. And with Family Networks, continued funding, I can carry on the legacy and help other families going through what I'm going through, so that way they don't have to struggle and it's not incredibly hard. Because with a disabled child, we have a lot on our plate to begin with, and to just lose control of our life, it's devastating. So Family Networks have basically put me on the right path. Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Kevin Campbell. Since 2001, I've been the CEO of Great Oregon Behavioral Health, and since 2012, I've been the CEO of Eastern Oregon CCO. I was born in Heppner. I'm a graduate of University of Portland, and I live in the Dalles. I have a fair number of you covered. The issue that I see is we've learned a lot from the CCO effort. We've learned that we work better together as friends looking for common solutions than as rivals fighting over money. And I'm in awe of what I've heard so far tonight. I've heard people with different ideas, but the real solution is how we come together in ways that we have in the healthcare world across the broader ecosystem of public expenditures. Health, human services, and public safety in this state cost 93% of the budget. The CCO and GOBI stand ready to do our part. Disinvestment in Eastern Oregon, 2 years ago we closed the state hospital over here. Those jobs have not come back. If we close other state sponsored jobs in this part of the state, they won't be back. Junction City is on the docket this time for closure. We stand ready to help the state invest in community-based services like we have John Day, Heppner, Umatilla, and other communities to quit putting people in the state hospital and start treating them with better health, better care, and lower costs in rural Oregon. The elephant in the room is PERS. And as a CEO of a not-for-profit corporation, I can tell you a lot of not-for-profits were formed because people couldn't afford the PERS as public employers any longer. The one thing the state of Oregon does very, very well is invest money. I believe if private not-for-profits that are funded by government money had access to the local government investment pool and to PERS 2.0, we could help grow our way out of the problem rather than spreading the existing pain.
Hello, co-chairs and committee members. I'm wearing yellow in support of intellectual disabilities. Thank you for coming this evening. My name is Laura Knoppenberger, and I'm the Associate Director of Eastern Oregon Support Services Brokerage. We cover 13 counties in Eastern Oregon, from the Washington to the Idaho to the California borders. So I drive a lot of territory. We presently provide home and community-based services to 472 individuals who experience intellectual disabilities, which represents an estimated 6% of people with IDD in the state. So while it's a small number, it's a very large territory to cover and provide supports in. I'm here tonight to advocate on behalf of maintaining funding for IDD services, maintaining funding for family networks who do a phenomenal job of providing extensive supports to individuals and families, which helps to prepare them to live a full and meaningful life, and to advocate that we protect the Fairview Housing Trust as it was a promise to individuals with IDD. Again, thank you for your time.
Thank you all. This is a public safety panel coming up, and after that, I'd like to hear from Vern Fredrickson, Clint Carlson, and Thomas Beechinor. Beechinor?
Co-chairs Devlin Nathanson, members of the committee, my name is Stuart Roberts. I'm the chief of police in the city of Pendleton, which is a position I've held for over 14 years now. I'm here tonight to advocate for the services, crucial services provided by the Oregon State Police, many of which are sole source, like tribal gaming, identification, the Safe Oregon tip line, forensic services, and others. But I want to speak specifically to the Criminal Investigations Division and the Drug Enforcement Section. Annually, the state of Oregon receives about $3.6 million to fund 20 initiatives statewide with the charge of identifying, disrupting, and dismantling drug trafficking organizations in our state. This is a part of the high-intensity drug trafficking area, which is sponsored by the Office of National Drug Control Policy out of Washington, D.C. Umatilla County is a HIDTA county. We have a multi-jurisdictional drug task force comprised of 10 detectives from several agencies in Umatilla and Morrill counties. They are co-located and co-mingled. Three of those individuals on that task force are DES personnel. So that's a third of the team if and when everybody is able to contribute resources. But due to the number of vacancies that a number of the partner agencies have experienced over the last several years, we average about six personnel throughout the year. And even with that said, we're one of the highest producing task forces in the state of Oregon. I serve on the HIDTA board, so I see every initiative and I see what they do for this state. As an example, in the first 11 months of 2016, Bent was responsible for the seizure of over 68 pounds of methamphetamine, 8 pounds of cocaine, over a pound of heroin, over 420 pounds of marijuana grown on state and federal lands. They generated over 186 cases and case referrals of polydrug organizations in multiple states. They also arrested over 53 fugitives that are narcotics-related fugitives and recovered over 28 firearms. All of these things contribute to the safety of our communities, and I implore you to appropriately fund Oregon State Police.
Excuse me, my name is Art Kegler, and I'm here on the basis of the local realtors in this area, the Columbia Basin Board of Realtors and the Umatilla Board of Realtors. Now, those realtors cover an area from Heppner to Athena. Now, some people on that committee may not know where they are, but there are two representatives that live in those cities. Why would realtors be here speaking on safety and about the crime lab and also what the chief just talked about with the narcotic officers? Why would a realtor be here? Simply because when I go out to show people property, we get in the car and we start driving. They say, is there any crime in this town? I say, are there any people in this town? So in reality, we have to control crime. And there are two ways that we do it, is the forensic lab that is in Pendleton, and we had in Hermiston, I have an office in Hermiston, we had a double murder, two different locations along with a suicide. That situation for investigation by the forensic people, if they had to come from Portland and then also mitigate the gorge, which may be froze up, it could be many days before the crime was investigated. The crime lab in Pendleton is very important. One of the ways to evaluate that is to think of this. It is the same distance from Portland to Ontario as it is from Portland to south of the California border. So there's a long time in a long lapse time. As far as the chief spoke about the drugs that the Bent team has confiscated, all I'm saying is fund the narcotics division so that we do not put those drugs back on the street.
Good evening, co-chairs and committee members. I'm Darla Huxall. I'm the chief of police for the city of Umatilla. I'd like to express my concerns with public safety in Eastern Oregon, specifically with the governor's proposed cuts of the Pendleton Crime Lab and the reduction of the drug detectives with the Oregon State Police. The impact of these two cuts would be devastating to our public safety for all law enforcement agencies and the communities serving in Eastern Oregon. The Pendleton Crime Lab is currently the only lab in Eastern Oregon and provides multitude of services. Our major crime team relies on the partnership we have with local crime lab technicians to respond to major crime scenes, to process, collect, and analyze evidence, all to maintain the integrity of these investigations. With those types of scenes, time is of the essence. When you have to tell a family member that has a victim of a homicide that they have to wait for the crime team to get there is hard. It's especially hard when you have to now tell them that they're coming from the Portland area. We also rely on the crime lab to provide training and also court testimony. In 2009, we proved the necessity of the crime lab in Pendleton. In 2017, the necessity is still there, if not greater. Eastern Oregon needs a crime lab and Eastern Oregon deserves a crime lab. We rely on partnerships in Eastern Oregon, the crime lab, and the OSP drug task force are vital elements to our success. I urge you to maintain the funding of the crime lab and the BENT team. Thank you.
Thank you all.
I get left these for all of the members here, and I've also emailed you already to your ways of
perfect.
Chairman Devlin and Nathanson, my name is Clint Carlson. I'm a fourth generation dryland wheat farmer from Ione, Oregon. I'm currently on the board of directors for the Oregon Wheat Growers League and currently commissioner for the Morrill County Planning Commission. I appreciate the opportunity to speak tonight. In our region, we receive an average of 8 to 10 inches of rain per year. Therefore, we use summer fallow rotation to accumulate 1 year's moisture in the ground that is fallow and utilize the next year's moisture in the crop that is planted that grows to maturity. Over the years, we've gone from using a mowboard plow and having issues with water and soil erosion to direct seeding where we have virtually none no erosion. And during that same period of time, we've had hundreds of new varieties of wheat with better yields, better quality, and traits that are resistant to disease, fungus, rust, insects, and drought. So over the last half century, we have made dramatic improvements in soil, clean water, and clean air. So why am I telling you this? Most of these evolutions I've described came from the research scientists at Seabark, HAREC, and with the county agents doing trials on the ground. They have worked with us and the landowners as landowners to improve our soil, air, seed varieties, water, shed health, and help increase our profitability. As we speak, we have scientists at Seabark and the Morrill County Extension Office working on solutions to find new safe herbicides, use integrated pest management, and introduce seed varieties that can reduce the use of pesticides and help maintain the direct seed technology that is cost effective and safe for us to grow our crops. So to us in Umatilla and Morrill County, the OSU statewide program is very important for our success and survival. In the last session, the legislature increased our service levels to $14 million. The governor's budget is going to eliminate nearly 70% of that, and we plead with you to pass Senate Bill 805 and continue the funding at the recommended level. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And the next panel to start getting ready to come up is Jer Pratton, Alex McCadden, and David Nelson.
Good evening, and thank you for allowing me to testify. My name is Thomas Beechner, and along with my wife and family, we ranch and manage private forest land in Umatilla County that has been in our family for over 150 years. Four generations of my family have sought answers to pressing problems from the Agricultural Extension Service. 35 years ago, my wife and I sought out OSU's Forestry Extension Program in order to get help in managing our forest property. And I sit here tonight speaking before you to say that without Extension's continuing guidance, the successes that we have achieved in developing a healthy forest, good wildlife habitat, clean air, and clean water would not have been possible. I applaud you folks for your work in increasing the statewide public services budget in the last legislative session. Your action has allowed us to fund a new field agent in Lane County, a statewide specialist in timber harvesting and forest operations who is providing workshops across the state helping small landowners. In addition, your budget increase also funded important research in the Forest Research Lab and the Tallwood Design Institute, both of which are having positive impacts in Oregon wood products industry. Unfortunately, we'll lose much of what we've gained due to inflation and the rising PERS cost without some action. The OSU Board of Trustees is asking for only the amount of funding needed to provide the same level of service in the next biennium, but that will take an increase of $9.4 million. Please consider this as a way of providing for OSU Extension and the statewide public services. Thank you.
Chairs, Senator Devlin, Representative Nathanson, members of the committee, thank you for holding this meeting in Eastern Oregon. My name is Vern Fredrickson, and I live here in Hermiston. My family has a diversified irrigated farming operation and forage exporting business, Oregon Hay Products, located in Boardman. I'm speaking in support of the statewide public service programs, specifically the Extension Service and Agricultural Experiment Station and Senate Bill 805. Thank you for the increased support during the last biennium. This has allowed the local Hermiston Agricultural Research and Extension Center to fill positions that have been vacant. We've used the resources of the Research and Extension Center many times over the last 40 years. It is a facility that everyone in the state can be proud of. The research and support that goes on there is vital to the ag industry locally, nationally, and throughout the world. The transformation of Greenwood Resources Tree Farm back to center pivot irrigated farmland and the possibility of more irrigated irrigation from the Columbia River will create more demand for services and support from the Hermiston Station. We are working with Portland General Electric on their quest to develop a source of biomass for their biofuel conversion for the coal-fired plant in Boardman. The personnel in the extension and research program have been instrumental in helping develop guidelines within which this experimental production has begun. The work being done in Hermiston on nutrient and water management and irrigated agriculture area is important to all of us in the state. I am a state committee member for the Farm Service Agency, which helps administer the United States Department of Agricultural programs to all the participating agricultural producers in Oregon. And I am not representing the Farm Service Agency today, but I want you to know that we use the resources of the Extension Agency to make decisions. There are several plaques at the Hermiston Station which memorialize the private industry contributions. The Extension Service deserves public support as well. Thank you.
In the next group, I would like to have...
Hi. My name is David Nelson, Pendleton, Oregon. I'm currently serving as the chair for the Board of Trustees of Eastern Oregon University. And the statewide system for universities are asking, as the group of seven, for $767 million to adequately fund their operations. But I believe that we need to talk about education in the whole spectrum, from pre-K all the way through to higher education. And so when you talk about asking for money for higher education, you're talking about asking money for all of education. And what I'm asking you as this board is to become champions for education in the state of Oregon. So I have some solutions, too. First one is a sale and lease back of state property. And you'll get a handout, something of this nature. In the state of California, in 2010, sold 11 buildings that they owned and raised $2.3 billion. And out of that $2.3 billion, $1.2 went for general fund, and the other billion plus went to pay off general obligation bonds. So I think that's an answer. And the state of Oregon, I think, Chair Devlin, you did an inventory of state property. There's like 35 or 40 pages of state property that you're getting no appreciation of that value. And this is a way to get some appreciation from that value. And, of course, I can't come to this board without talking about Columbia River water. Oregon contributes almost 20% of the flow of the Columbia River. Put us on a parity on the equal basis with the state of Washington. Let us use as much water as the state of Washington uses. You'll create a billion-dollar industry out here and put it in the multiplier effect. You'll just get a ton of money from taxpayers. So happy to discuss these proposals with you. And thank you very much for coming out and seeing us. Good to see you all.
And getting ready to come up next, please, Dwight Dill, Catherine Palmer, and Alice Massey.
Greetings, Co-Chair Devlin, Co-Chair Nathanson, members of the committee. My name is Alex McAdad. I work in government relations at Eastern Oregon University in the Grand. It's a pleasure to be here before you again 2 years after testifying before the same body in 2015, right before you made very generous investments in public higher education in the state. Today I'm returning to you as a recent graduate of Eastern Oregon University's political science program and now an advocate for my alma mater. I am a third-generation college student. My aunt holds a master's degree. My father recently completed his associate's degree in electronics. My grandfather taught chemistry at Cal State. What makes my story remarkable is that where it all started. My grandfather came to the United States fleeing conflict and destruction in the Middle East over 50 years ago, and it was only after coming here that he decided to pursue a vocation in higher education. He joined the military, became a citizen, began teaching chemistry in California. The United States is a nation of immigrants. My success in completing a BS degree at EOU stands as a testament to the power of education to advance the economic status of everyone in the United States, regardless of immigration origin, economic status, or gender. As you move forward in writing the next budget, I hope that you will remember stories like mine, move forward with making the state a better place for everyone who comes here, and fund public universities at $765 million. Thank you very much.
Senators and representatives, I really appreciate your coming out to listen. This is terrific. By the way, I support Senator Nelson's plan for Juniper Canyon. I think it's the best plan I've heard for water development in years and years and resource development. Having said that little commercial, I'll move on. My name is Jer Pratton, and I've spent all of my adult professional life in education in Oregon since 1967. And if you do the math, that's 50 years. As a teacher, a principal, and a superintendent of the Hood River School District, the Hermiston School District, Gresham Barlow's, and Tigard and Tualatin School Districts as well. Now I'm on the Board of Trustees at Eastern Oregon University, and I'm here on behalf of Eastern Oregon University this evening. I have two messages. First, we in Eastern Oregon highly value higher education. We do so because it's an economic driver. All you have to do is look around and compare Hermiston now to 20 years ago. It provides human capital to run our industries. It puts people to work with skills. And it provides informed and educated citizenry. Just take a look at our growth and you'll see what I'm talking about. My second message is the legislature must address the unfunded PERS situation in 2017 session. This is the big gorilla in the room and has been for a long time, and it's pushing all other state and local interests aside. The PERS cannot be kicked down the road yet again to future sessions. If it persists, all the other needs, wants, and discussions are superfluous. Back to my first message. It was recently reported that Oregon State University is considering a 10.9% raise in their tuition. Eastern Oregon University had to raise our tuition just recently, a year ago. We cannot keep putting this financial... Am I done already? Rats, I'll send it to you.
Thank you. Yep, you know where to find us. And after this group, I would call on Shane Arndt, Max Daggett, and Brian Brandstetter.
I guess this mic's in front of me. I will go. Greetings, Joint Committee on Ways and Means. I have a letter here that I'm going to submit with some additional information. That this additional information is from the Director of Aging and People with Disabilities and the Director of Developmental Disability Services. I am also wearing yellow, which gives you the idea that yes, I am going to visit with you about IDD. My name is Catherine Palmer. I'm in Pendleton. And I want to first give you a little history on me. I went to Pilot Rock High School, Blue Mountain Community College, I know they're here. I went to EOU, I know they're here. I went to OSU, I know they're here. I have a master's degree. As soon as I received my master's degree, I realized that it was going to be hard to continue teaching because I have a son with severe disabilities. From that point on, I did everything I could to support him at home, 19 years. Now, after 19 years, I knew I had to make a choice, which means I was in crisis. When you're in a situation of crisis, when you have a son or a daughter with severe disabilities, there are places that you need to go. This brings me to the letter. I encourage you to reinstate the Eastern Oregon Regional Developmental Disabilities Program. The program was removed from the governor's proposed budget. This is a 14-county service, and the situation reminds me of a previous legislative issue a couple sessions ago, the effort to save the Eastern Oregon ESDs. Thank you for your time.
Hello, my name is Alice Massey. I wish to speak with you about the urgent crisis facing agencies serving people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. I speak not only as a professional who's worked in this field for 30 years in Oregon, but also as a family member of a sister with disabilities who lives in a group home. The situation faced by group home agencies in Oregon has become dire, and these group homes earn poverty wages. Although they are paid similar to fast food workers, the work they do is far from unskilled labor. On an average day, a direct support professional assists individuals with all activities of daily living, including mobility, bathing, toileting, meal preparation, household chores, communication, money management, safety, transportation, medication administration, medical appointments, and manage of behavioral issues. Direct support professionals cannot live on poverty wages and must usually take on second or even third jobs if they want to remain working in this field. The low wages contribute to very high staff turnover and difficulty for agencies to hire and retain qualified staff. Chronic staffing shortages have become the new norm. These staffing shortages compromise health and safety for the individuals, the direct care staff, and occasionally the community. They've also led to increased crises for individuals with disabilities who often end up in hospital emergency rooms or local jails because of chronic resource shortages. Failing to provide direct support professionals with a living wage is not a cost-saving measure. It simply shifts costs to more expensive crisis settings that are not appropriate to meet the needs of people with disabilities. I urge you to correct this wage inequity. Thank you.
Honorable co-chairs, members of the committee. My name is Dwight Dill. I'm the mental health director at the Union County Center for Human Development in La Grande, and I'm here to speak with you about mental health services, addiction services, and developmental disabilities as well. Our agency provides both children and adult mental health, addiction treatment. We are the public health agency for the county. We are also the county veteran service office, as well as the county developmental disabilities program. I tuned in to the Joint Ways and Means Subcommittee on Human Services earlier this week, and I have to say, after hearing some of the comments about the state of mental health services, I was prepared to fire myself. It was not flattering, but I made some observations, and I thought about that. In Eastern Oregon, I think things look very different, and I think we have a much stronger system. I think we have a much stronger partnership with our community partners. We network well across county lines. We have Greater Oregon Behavioral Health operating. Kevin spoke earlier to you about GOBI. We have done a lot of innovations through GOBI over the years, and I think we've become a leader in the state in terms of the delivery of behavioral health services. In our county, in Union County, we have a jail diversion program that's targeting keeping people out of jails, out of the correction system. We work closely with the DA's office. We work closely with the law enforcement. We have a ACT program for individuals with severe and persistent mental illness. We have an ESA program targeting adolescents and young adults. I think we provide a myriad of services. We are in the emergency room on a daily basis. We partner with our primary care clinics. We have contracts and funding in place to provide behaviors in our primary care clinics, and I think we have a healthy and robust system out here. I would encourage you to come visit us. We'd love to show it off. Thank you.
After this panel, we will hear from Dave Pranger, Michael Schaefer, and Kim
Pusey.
Greetings, my name is Shane Arndt. I work for Umatilla County Health Department, and I've had the opportunity as an alcohol and drug counselor to speak to the needs of many children and youth over the last 6 years. I have a passion to see people have the opportunity to pursue their vision and dream, you know, whatever that choice is, better their life, and funding is needed for treatment, and I would also advocate for prevention to help avoid some of the barriers that can get in the way for certain individuals. With that being said, I'm also here to advocate for two institutions. One is the school-based health center. I really think that that is a place that can help triage and identify students either for substance abuse or mental health issues and needs who can get the services they need as soon and as quickly as possible. There's just a great need, and funding is needed to make that happen. I'd like to close with my time by saying I wished I was wearing blue. My other role is as a counselor at the school-based health, or at the Garrett Lee Smith Library at BMCC. We also have the opportunity there to encourage students, perhaps who've started out in a tough way, turn around, turn their lives around, and pursue higher education. Again, pursue those dreams. And I'll close by saying, go Timberwolves.
I want to thank you all for allowing me to talk to you all tonight. My name is Max Daggett. I'm the criminal investigation supervisor for the Umatilla Tribal Police Department, Confederated Tribes Umatilla Indian Reservation. I've been employed there for 27 years. I'm also a member of the Umatilla County, Morrill County Major Crime Team. I'm here tonight to request a continuation funding of the Oregon State Police, particularly the crime lab in Pendleton. I'm also responsible for all the evidence within our agency, and I can tell you that eliminating the crime lab would be a major blow to all law enforcement in Eastern Oregon. Unfortunately, last year I have two homicides that I'm responsible for on the Umatilla Indian Reservation. Both cases, Oregon State Crime Lab was above and beyond a great asset to my investigations. Their work was extremely important. They were there real quickly. And like folks talked about earlier, if we have to wait for somebody to come from Portland, both my homicides were in the winter time. One was on the mountain with 2 feet of snow outside. If I had to wait 2 days for crime people from Portland, that case would have been lost. In one of my two homicides, the crime lab was able to preserve evidence that actually was critical in identifying the homicide weapon and the suspect that used it. We do not have the ability, I'm a small department, we don't have the manpower or the professional training for the tasks that the crime lab provides for us. The increased cost for all of our agencies is yet another impact we are unable to manage. If the crime lab in Pendleton closes, it means we're going to have to transport our evidence to Portland, 212 miles away. We just don't have the money or the manpower to do that. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, co-chairs and chairs of the committee and all the committee members for coming to Eastern Oregon. My name is Brian Brandstetter. I'm a fourth-generation Eastern Oregon family member that's been out here, our family farms and a lot of different things, but I'm an employee of the Oregon Department of Corrections. And I'm here to advocate that, along with the Oregon Department of Corrections, in taking care of that, because we as a department moved a lot of the prisons out to Eastern Oregon so that there was not a major population of prisons just in the valley in the I-5 corridor. And in the process of that, we also have workers that are out here that are employed by the Oregon Department of Corrections. And of the shift since about 2007, most of the institutions on the east side of the state have become the training ground. So we have a lot of newer employees out here that are here and they come and go on a regular basis. So safety is a big, huge issue for those of us that work within the department and my coworkers. And as an AFSCME member who represents these people, it's hugely important that we have members that are here that are working for us that get to see what happens within the Oregon Department of Corrections. Retirement is one of the major things that draws a lot of people into public service. And PERS is the big gorilla in the family that nobody wants to talk about. I hope that when you folks are able to sit down there, since 97 didn't pass and some funding budgets, while it wasn't a great solution, I hope you folks are able to find something, because if there's not a stable funding issue to take care of all those things, we won't be able to do it. I have a different look at the world and how it comes because I've been on the City Council of Pendleton, I've been on the Blue Mountain Community College Board, and the things are is if we don't take care of the funding for these things, the community colleges and the state university system are the economic driving engines that make our state great and make us be able to do things. And those are the parts that we can invest in. And you folks are in a position to help do some of those things to help us. The crime lab helps the Department of Corrections. You have basically four major institutions on this site. So thank you for your time, folks.
Thank you. This panel is Dave, Michael, and Kim. And after that, Larissa Golightly, Aspen Berkmeyer, and Robert Klang, I think.
Welcome, friends. My name is Kim Pusey. I'm general manager of the Port of Umatilla, and I'm on the board of trustees of Blue Mountain Community College. There's 17 community colleges in Oregon, as you know. In 2007, when the recession began, enrollment went up in all of them. And as the recession began to come to an end, enrollment dropped. And it puts us in a situation where, because of falling enrollment, we have to either look to the legislature to help us fund the colleges or to increasing tuition. What you'll know is in the recovery, you have more revenue and we have less students and we're kind of on a teeter-totter. And so I hope you will help us fund community colleges at a reasonable level. With respect to another subject, infrastructure, some of you have been on a tour with me in this area, and I can barely be contained when I start to talk about infrastructure. I love infrastructure. I like pipes and wires and byways, highways, freeways. I've liked it ever since the Erie Canal, the Transcontinental Railroad, and the Interstate Highway System. I love Connect Oregon. Keep doing that. I like it so much. I was talking to Representative Smith yesterday about asphalt recipes. I like this stuff. So I'd like to see an FDR-level infrastructure package in the state of Oregon. I said something about Connect Oregon. Oh, the other elephant in the room besides PERS, revenue. Raise my fuel tax. I'm fine with my income tax. I'm fine with property tax. I would vote yes for a sales tax. I'm just here as a person saying that. And I have voted yes on every bond initiative locally since I've been in this state for 24 years. So you can raise my taxes to come up with the revenues. Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Michael Schaefer, and I'm a Oregon 4-H State Ambassador. This means that I travel around the state of Oregon to promote and be the public face of our 4-H program. The OSU Extension Program has played a major role in the development of who I am today. Through such programs as 4-H, I've developed life skills and found lifelong passions such as politics and public speaking. Through OSU Extension, I've been able to travel around the country, meet senators and congressmen, and develop relationships with some of the brightest minds of my generation. None of this would have been possible for me to do without the tireless help of the men and women that work for OSU Extension. The 4-H program turned a shy little fourth grade boy into a senior that feels confident enough to go into the world and make a meaningful difference for generations to come. The goal of the 4-H program is to develop top-tier citizens that feel compelled to give back to society and improve the world around them. This is why it is so important for OSU Extension to receive adequate funding to maintain the level of personnel. Without this funding, programs such as 4-H would be severely impacted, and my journey may be one that would not be able to be replicated by other 4-H members. And that would be as injurious to society as a whole as it would be to those individuals. I urge you to give OSU Extension Program the funding that is needed to maintain current levels of staffing. Thank you for your time.
Co-Chair Nathanson, Co-Chair Devlin, members of the committee. My name is Dave Pranger. I am from Heppner, and I am currently the president of the Oregon County Weed Control Association. That's not the kind you smoke. Okay, just to let you know, it's for noxious weed control, and I'm here to voice my support for the Oregon Department of Agriculture's Noxious Weed Control Program. It could really use some help right now. We're in a situation right now where we have lost our biological control entomologist to retirement last year, and he was a great mentor to me and really helped me become the person I am in the field of noxious weed control. Biocontrol to this state of Oregon has helped farmers, ranchers, as well as recreationalists, wildlife, and I would really encourage your support of the biological control program. Right now it is on the cutting blocks, and without that program, I think that a lot of county programs would be in the same situation. There is a House Bill 2043 that is also going through the process right now, looking for funding for noxious weed control, and I encourage you to support that as it makes its way through the process. But I thank you for your time.
Thank you all. The next group, there's a Matt Winnick. I want to be sure you're ready, and I'll call a couple other names in a minute.
Hello, I'm Robert Kling, Eastern Oregon Head Start. I'm here representing 190 families from Union and Baker counties. Head Start is a dual generational program. We provide comprehensive services to 3, 4, and 5-year-olds. Comprehensive services means that we have a family services component. Family services component consists of case managers that go into students' homes, work directly with parents to first identify what needs could be within that household, and then through the high quality relationship that they have with that family, get them connected to the services that exist within their small communities. We have a health and nutrition component that consists of making sure that children are able to get to their doctors and their dentists. We work very hard to remove any barriers. We work very closely with agencies like Greater Oregon Behavioral Health Incorporated. We work really closely with our Center for Human Development. We work very closely with all of our local agencies to make sure that the barriers that some of these vulnerable families face are removed so that these children and families can get the care that they need. The component that most of you are probably most familiar with would be the high quality academics that we have in the classroom for our children. This is to prepare children to be ready for kindergarten. Kindergarten readiness is definitely a driving force in Head Start. We recognize that the most important component of that is that parents are the first and most important teachers of their children. I urge all of you to continue your support for Head Start, and also to go visit the local Head Starts in your areas. Go share a meal with the kiddos in these classrooms. Thank you for coming to Eastern Oregon.
Chairman Devlin,
Chairpersons and members of the committee, I'm Aspen Bergmeyer, a junior at Imbler High School in Union County, and I'm here to testify and ask for your support and funding on House Bill 2382 and Senate Bill 230. Throughout life, we all make choices. Choices that define us in who we are and who we will become. One of the biggest choices that has helped to define me as an individual was the choice to join FFA. The primary goal of FFA is to make a difference in the lives of students by developing their potential through premier leadership, personal growth, and career success. However, FFA is so much more. FFA teaches and instills in students core values such as honesty, courage, pride, tradition, and heart. These are values that are hard to define, but are unmistakable when present. And for me, when I see these things in my fellow FFA members, as we prepare for a competition or just work in the classroom, it's really something special. Each and every one of us is unique and different, but these values that we have learned through FFA are the common thread that binds us all together. School teaches us to be good students, sports teach us to be good athletes, but FFA teaches us to be good people. FFA teaches us to work hard, to care for the land, our animals, and each other. It teaches us to believe in ourselves and trust in our advisors. Ultimately, FFA has taught me what is really important in life, what values to uphold, and what dreams to embrace. I believe that FFA isn't just an organization. It is a part of me and a part of countless other FFA members. Through my experiences in FFA, I've been defined, guided, and prepared for my future. Thank you.
On deck, in addition to Matt, Lori Kimball and Wayne DeLong.
Hi, my name is Larissa Golightly, and I'm a student at BMCC. I'm very privileged to come and talk to you guys today about something that's much bigger than myself, but here's a little bit of why it's important to me to have higher education. Due to circumstances beyond my control, I was not able to obtain all that public education had to offer me in high school. I missed many days, months, and years of school because of a health crisis. When I graduated high school, I was accepted into a major university. I had a dream, like many others, of obtaining a college degree. However, I had no idea that I was about to jump off the deep end when I never learned to swim. True, I did enough in high school to graduate. However, I did it my way. My high school principal and superintendent understood that I had to do my work differently than the other students because I couldn't attend my classes. I never learned the basics. I did my work, but I didn't take the notes. They were given to me. I took tests, but they consisted of me alone in a room, having prepared as long as I liked. I was so far behind my fellow classmates, it didn't matter when I took them. I had books on tape or books read to me because I was too sick to read them myself. So after a year at this university, I was put on academic probation due to my GPA. I felt like a failure. I felt I had no idea how to learn. The first thing we are taught in school is how to learn. And I missed it. How would I ever accomplish anything academically? I was lost in the cracks. I was intelligent enough to be accepted into a major university, yet I couldn't even take my own notes. I didn't know where to go or if I would ever be successful when it came to my studies. I took a few years off and worked. Then one day, my brother showed me a brochure to Blue Mountain Community College. I took a tour and decided to give my future in education another go. I have not once regretted that decision. I am learning to learn. I am no longer a number, I am a name. I am Larissa Golightly. The class sizes allow for class discussions and dialogue. If I feel lost, I can discuss with my professors in person. When I am gone, it is noticed. I no longer fall to the side. I feel like I matter. Thank you.
Hi, thank you all for coming to Eastern Oregon. We really appreciate you giving us all the opportunity to speak before you. My name is Lori Kimball, and I'm here representing the Elgin Community Building Committee for the Elgin Stampede Association. The community of Elgin is in dire need of a new facility to replace the 64-year-old community hall that currently exists on the Stampede grounds in Elgin. The existing community hall is utilized by over 30 organizations annually, and we estimate it to host 5,000 people during those events. In addition, the Elgin Stampede Association events host an average of 9,000 people annually, providing significant economic contribution to our community. Our vision is to create a facility that meets the demands for an appropriately sized, safely constructed, ADA accessible, and environmentally efficient space. The new facility would better meet the significant needs of our local organizations and community members, and would provide resources that does not currently exist in size or scale in any of the many adjacent counties in Northeast Oregon. Lastly, this new multipurpose building would allow for increased utilization and therefore increased stimulus to our economically challenged rural region. Our facility is vital to the well-being of numerous organizations as well as paramount in providing economic stimulus to our rural economy. We are requesting capital funding to construct an 11,000 square feet regional multipurpose conference center comprised of event and meeting space, commercial kitchen, restroom facilities, and a museum. One notable use of our existing Stampede Hall is the number of funerals held in the facility. The Stampeders donate the space for that use and also prepare a free meal after the service for the friends and family of the deceased. At times, these free meals feed in excess of 200 people. This is critically important effort as it is the only space adequate enough for large funerals, and it truly demonstrates what a meaningful facility. Thank you all. Have a safe trip home.
I'd like to thank you all for coming to Eastern Oregon. My name is Matt Winnick. I am here in support of the Oregon Department of Agriculture Noxious Weed Control Program, especially the cutting of our biological control agent. With Eric retiring, that position is slated to be cut this year. And in weed control, we are taught to practice IPM, which is integrated pest management, where we use all sorts of different techniques to control our invasive species weeds that we have here, from cultivation to manual control to herbicide control and to biological control. If we get rid of our biological control program, that is one tool out of our toolbox that we cannot use. We have agents here, but there are many that are in the pipeline coming down that are going to be a huge impact if we can get some of these released. There's a lot of weeds, for one, Dalmatian toad flax, which I have in Grant County, that we released a biological control agent on in 2008, and we no longer have to control this weed because the biological control agents are taking control of it for us. So it's a battle that we don't have to fight, and we can go on to other weeds that don't have biological control agents. So I very strongly ask for the support of supporting our biological control program through the Department of Agriculture. And also House Bill 2043, I ask for support of that for the ODA funding and partial funding for our counties. Some of our counties have superb weed control programs, and other misfortunate counties, they don't have as much money as the other ones, they don't have anything. In my part of the world, down in Grant County, we work with Wheeler County and the surrounding counties to help them out with weed control problems that they have where they don't have funding for. So this funding can help establish some base programs in some of the counties that don't have as much funding available to try to keep these weeds at bay and from spreading and creating more of a problem. So I ask your support on that, and I thank you for listening to me, and thank you for coming to Eastern Oregon.
Hello, I'm Wayne DeLong, Manager of Operations of the Oregon Eastern Railroad out of Vail, Oregon. We are a short line consisting of about 25 miles of track, one locomotive, a backhoe, a couple of high rails. Including me, we have a three-man operation. However, we serve Eagle Pritchard Minerals and a co-op propane yard. Between the two of them, they have about 400 employees, and we handle roughly 50% of their traffic. Hence, we're pretty important to both of them. We used to have a grain customer has dropped from the rail transport. This has taken a dramatic impact on our bottom line. Hence, we cannot afford to do projects like Connect Oregon has helped us with in the past. Connect Oregon, transportation grants, lots of interested parties are always bidding for these grants. I've been on a couple of them now. Connect Oregon 3 and 4 helped us fix our interchange with Union Pacific. In the neighborhood, 600 ties were replaced, ballast added, and inspection walkways added as well. If these projects had not been done, it is possible UP would have stopped delivering to us. Connect Oregon 6 this year, our biggest project yet, replacing three small bridges with culverts and repairing two larger bridges. Repair a bridge kind of speaks for itself. A damaged bridge is not a safe bridge. The bill on the two big bridges would be out of our reach if it wasn't for Connect Oregon. Future projects ideas vary, but the condition of our tracks tells me we need Connect Oregon in the future. And I know that there's a lot of other small transportation entities out there that could use it as well. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. We don't have time for everybody who's on the list. I appreciate the help I'm getting from Senator Devlin and Representative Smith in trying to read all the names on all the lists. We're going to get through as many as we can. For right now, Cam Pruce, Chelsea Mansfield, and Heidi Seip. And then after that, please, Jan Schroth, Trish Rossell, and Delta Le Bernard.
Good evening, co-chairs and fellow members of the board. I stand before you today as one of the 64% of women who teach agriculture and one of the 60% of ag teachers who have taught 7 years or less. Agriculture is a part of who I am, and the FFA is an organization that has impacted my life tremendously in the past and currently today. I'll explain to you the three-circle model of our educational value to students. First of all, there's the classroom, to which my experience was animal science, welding and fabrication, plant science, and much more, which also provided students and myself with college credits that were free. Secondly, there is the supervised agricultural experience component, where I helped guide tourists in the beautiful Eagle Cap Wilderness of Wallowa County and earned me a national finalist proficiency. And finally, the FFA, which taught me the value of serving others, where I served as the Oregon FFA State Vice President. These dreams were achieved through an organization and through the help of a teacher, my ag teacher, who dedicated more time, resources, and just whatever I needed more than any other teacher in my high school. This inspiration is what guided me to where I am today, teaching the youth of the United States to be premier leaders, to achieve personal growth and career success. My students told me that ag class teaches them how to solve real world problems through the application of science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. We're at a pivotal point in our profession to help reach more students, to allow more students to be a part of the FFA, and to a time and effort to recognize in those programs in terms of providing them the assistance that they need. While I stand before you today, there are many others that would love your support of House Bill 2382 and Senate Bill 230, which has the profound effect of impacting our youth, our communities, our agriculture, and ultimately our economy, and furthermore, our future. Thank you.
Thank you, co-chairs, members of the committee. I appreciate your dedication to Oregon. I know many in the audience are also here today to discuss K-12 funding, and we won't have time, so I simply ask those members to please stand. As you know, Oregon is experiencing a teacher shortage. Recruiting staff is especially difficult, as many of us are vying for the same few candidates. When the budget cuts hit, enrollment in ed prep programs declined, and we're paying the price now. As such, we rely heavily on recruiting teachers out of industry, and I currently have many teachers on alternative type teaching licenses. The impact of future recruitment due to budget shortfall is one I cannot ignore. Please imagine with me for a moment how a business could attract the best and brightest with a recruiting pitch like this one. Come join our company. Though our funding has been in decline, we have expected more of our employees each year, and they've delivered. Bring your own materials, as nearly all our budget goes to paying staff. On that topic, please remember we'll likely ask you to take a pay cut or lose paid days, as that's how we've survived thus far. We are funded on 2-year cycles and have cut staff 8 of the past 10 years. So don't unpack your boxes too soon. And when you do, save those boxes. We need them for our art project. We don't know our actual budget until late June, so please turn down all other offers from out of state until we're sure we actually have the funds to fulfill this contract. We look forward to having you on our team.
I was embarrassed to even write something so ridiculous, and I mean no disrespect with the tone, but sadly, this isn't satire. This is my world, this is education, and it's unacceptable. Please find a long-term solution for funding education. PERS and revenue reform are needed. I know it's not simple, but I have faith in you. My students deserve better. Please help me from settling for anything less for them.
Thank you. Heidi, did you say your name for the record?
Heidi Seip.
Good evening. For the record, Cam Preuss, president at Blue Mountain Community College, and I would like to thank Representative Smith, Senator Hansel, and in his absence, Representative Brettle for their diligent work on behalf of Eastern Oregon. We appreciate you. I'd also like to thank those of you who've made the trip. We very much appreciate that you're seeing the world from the eastern side of the mountains. Pendleton is a place rich in history and culture, and it thrives on collaborative efforts throughout our areas. We have a project that values this opportunity for hands-on learning, strong partnership with community organizations, and the ability to serve the agriculture and educational needs of Eastern Oregon. There are students here today who would like to speak to you about affordability. I hope they have the chance. If they don't, I'm sure they will give you their testimony. But I'm going to talk about building for the future. The college has proposed, the governor has put it in her budget, and hopefully it stays in your framework, a $5 million bonding project for Blue Mountain Community College. This project will provide a state-of-the-art facility, support signature education programs that attract students from across the nation, and builds upon our region's agricultural-based economy and Western culture. Oh my gosh, I only have 30 seconds. The project is a partnership between Blue Mountain Community College, the Pendleton Roundup Association, and the City of Pendleton. It will leverage our national programs, our nationally recognized programs, and will directly support livestock industry, Keystone Western lifestyles, and the Eastern Oregon agriculture economy. Thank you, before I run out of time, for supporting this project and for supporting community colleges across the state.
While you're taking your seats, I would like to call Glenn Scott, Andy Miller.
Boy, it looks like it, yeah.
Is there an Andy Miller?
Yes.
And Mike Thorne.
Go ahead.
Please start.
Yes. Okay. Hi, my name is Jan Schroth, and I am from Hermiston. I'm with the ARC of Umatilla County, and I'm also a parent of an adult son who lives in his own apartment with support services being provided by the Horizon Project in Pendleton. The elimination of the Eastern Oregon Regional Developmental Disabilities Program is in the proposed governor's budget. I would like to urge you not to eliminate this regional program. In your travels, you may not hear a lot about the regional programs. Our partners on the west side of the state, for whatever reason, have not brought this to the forefront of our advocacy movement. If eliminated in the 14 countries that it serves, it could jeopardize the providers' and families' ability to serve current and future individuals in their homes and communities. There is a critical shortage of resources to serve people with IDD in Eastern Oregon, and this could only make the crisis worse. Our individuals and families could be in jeopardy, losing their community homes if they have to wait for services from the western side of the state. I know personally I've used our region's services a number of times over the years. I have no idea where I'd get these services if they were no longer available locally. Again, I urge you not to eliminate the Eastern Oregon Regional Developmental Disabilities Program. Also, I would like you to fund a living wage to stabilize the direct support professionals workforce that keep citizens with IDD healthy and safe while they live, learn, work, and age in our communities. Please make Oregon stronger by continuing to invest in supports for Oregonians with intellectual and developmental disabilities to live and work in their communities. Thank you.
I'm Trish Russell. I own a business locally, and I'm also the director of the Hermiston Warming Station. The Warming Station is a temporary homeless shelter that only operates when it's cold outside. In the last 90 days, we have provided over 600 rack nights. And if you're not in the hospitality business, that's a night with a body and a bed. So we are helping a tremendous number of people. What we are not equipped to do is help people who are in mental health crisis. We need inpatient mental health care. We recently had a gentleman wander into our outreach who was severely schizophrenic and had the mentality of a four-year-old. He could not take himself to the bathroom. He did not know his last name. He didn't know what year it was. And there were no resources available to care for him. It was not safe for him to be on the street. I took the day off from my paid job and called 30 different agencies trying to get help for him. I was told by the mental hospital in Salem that I should accuse him of a crime to get him admitted because that was the only way they would accept him was under court order. Obviously, I'm not gonna do that. So we had to wait for something bad to just happen on its own. And this person cycled between the emergency room, the police, and the warming station until finally he did commit a crime and he was arrested. But he's still not receiving the appropriate care for his condition. And he's not an anomaly. We encounter this in about 10% of the people that we deal with in the homeless community. So we really need a better resource for the mentally ill.
Thank you. Next panel, I'm gonna try to have time, please indulge me, for John Turner and Mary Finney. That may be the last.
Representative Nathanson and Senator Devlin, appreciate an opportunity to be with you, members of the committee. I'm Mike Thorne. I reside north of Pendleton on a family farm. And I'm here to this evening joining with some other comments that are made regarding a very creative and exciting project, which is an opportunity to do three things. Number one, expand the educational offering at BMCC, enhance the local economy for the city of Pendleton, and build upon the rich Western heritage of the Pendleton Roundup by adding facilities that will allow it to continue to expand its offering of events and activities. We're asking for the use of Article 11G bonding. We realize that's not general fund, but it's an important project and we wanted it to be sure and be on your list tonight. By approving the project, four things will happen. Number one, BMCC will have an opportunity to become a center for applied technical animal science and applied agricultural training. That's a program that's becoming less available at our four-year colleges and universities and due to the lack of space and facilities. You'll be providing a cost-conscious opportunity for students to gain access to a different type of program, and you'll be responding to a hands-on need in the changing agricultural world for a different type of training program. And finally, you will enable a community to join together in support of a common goal that will build economic outcomes for the benefit of the college, the city, the Roundup, and ultimately the state of Oregon. So thank you for your time. We look forward to working with you, asking for your support of the 11G bonding and the ability to work with you as we complete the project. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I'm here to speak on the ODVA budget. Basically, since Measure 96 passed with overwhelming result, looks like the governor wants to cut the general fund budget, basically for the windfall for the Veterans Administration. So basically, what the key veteran initiatives are identifying and connecting to veterans and their families to the benefits and services generally of federal dollars. And will it also increase the drawdown of significant federal funds? Leverage partnerships to expand service delivery and reduce demand on state resources by using all the veteran service organizations available. And align funding to sustainably invest in core services for the long term. Again, I am Andy Millar. I am from Milton Freewater. I am the alternate National Executive Committee man for the American Legion, Department of Oregon, the largest veteran service organization in Oregon, and one of 326,000 veterans. So please don't take the cuts on the back of our veterans. Thank you.
Co-Chair Devlin, Co-Chair Nathanson, members of the committee. The children's librarian in me wants everybody in the room to stand up and stretch, but my name is Mary Finney. I'm the director of the Pendleton Public Library. We are part of the Umatilla County Special Library District. There are 12 libraries. We're the largest. We serve a population of 24,000. Our smallest library serves a population of 300, so you can see the difference in just our county. We're a member of the SAGE system. It's a consortium of 77 libraries in 15 Eastern Oregon counties, which I think that should make us the biggest portion of Oregon. Obviously, we're far apart. We're few libraries. And of course, funding is going to be an issue. The libraries in Umatilla County are still on the same tax base that we were in 1986 when the library district was formed. Libraries, when you have to cut something, it's going to be programs. And because of that, the SAGE system has created Libraries of Eastern Oregon, which is charged with coming up with the funding sources for programs and the programs themselves. They work with the Oregon Humanities, which is a partner of the Oregon Cultural Trust. These programs are terribly important. We can do the bases for our patrons, but it's those programs that make really a community thrive. Oregon Humanities programs are innovative, and they are high caliber. The presenters are really great, and I'm running out of time. Please support the Cultural Trust. Thank you very much.
Thank you for fitting me in. I'm John Turner. I'm the mayor of the city of Pendleton, and I'd like to call your attention to the numerous cowboy hats, black and white, back here and in the rear. These are the directors of the Pendleton Roundup, the Pendleton Happy Canyon Night Show, and members of the BMCC Rodeo Team, and they're here to demonstrate their support for the BMCC Farm 2 construction project. The city of Pendleton is, for many reasons, wants to support this project. We're already looking at ways we can use city lands that are contiguous to the Roundup grounds to help support the construction of this project. I also want to tell you that we're excited about this because of the many types of events that this would help bring to our town. We recently had was approached by an event unit or organization that we wanted to bring 6 3-day equestrian type events to our town. If you use the same formula that Travel Oregon uses to calculate the economic impact of these type of events, they are worth about $500,000 a piece to our local economy. We've got all kinds of organizations that would like to come hold a competitions, equine related quarter horse events at the historic Pendleton Roundup. And we'd like to have those folks come and stay in our hotels, eat in our restaurants. They like Pendleton because of its attractions. We need to fill up our hotels and restaurants during the November through April period, and this building would help us do that. Finally, we've got a national championship rodeo team at Blue Mountain Community College. The women's team has won 2 back-to-back national titles recently, and our team has no place to practice. They go from rodeo arena to rodeo arena. In the winter months, they use a much too small indoor facility. And I would like to have a place that would make us the venue, the benchmark college throughout the nation. There's some 125 of these rodeo programs. We currently get students from all over the Northwest, and this building would help us be the go-to institution. Thank you very much.
Now it's time for me to applaud you. That was a wonderful hearing. Thank you very much. This is a great facility. I want to say thank you to our hosts for providing the facility, for your great hospitality. Thank you to all of you who have been so patient this evening, listening to each other and listening to everybody's concerns. You know where to reach us. You can send an email. You can leave testimony over here. We're adjourned.